Hello, good morning, and welcome to another episode of The Grill. Hey, my name's Chris Fenwick. I hope you know that by now. Today, I'm talking with a guy named Vid Price. Now, Vid comes from London. He's a friend of our friend, Thomas Grove Carter. And if you haven't seen the thing that Thomas recently cut for Honda, that's the thing with the R key when you watch it on YouTube and you hit the letter R and it keeps flipping over and reversing to the other side of the video, if you will. Fascinating. We mentioned that. I'll put that in the show notes. And maybe I'll have Thomas come and talk about that. But anyway, Thomas and Vid know each other, and Vid, his primary thing, his music videos. So we're going to get really deep into some of his philosophy of how he cuts a big budget music video. And it's fascinating. You know, he has an avid background, and, you know, a lot of people say that, you know, there's some missing features, and without them, you can't possibly get into it. We get pretty deep into that. So I got to say, I learned a lot of stuff. And then in the end there, we're going to talk about some of the organizational skills and sorting and whatnot that are very unique. Can something be very unique? Unique means one of a kind. That are unique to Final Cut 10. And I got to say, I walked away and I learned stuff. So I think you're going to enjoy this. I want to thank the people at Premium Beat. You know, we had them on Friday's show, and we spent the afternoon with Danny talking about the new website. So go check that out, premiumbeat.com, music, sound effects, and a great blog. They've really built, you know, an ecosystem, a community of people. And I got to say, it is amazing the amount of content that is on their blog. They're always adding new stuff. I don't know how they keep up with all that stuff, but tons of stuff to see and learn there. Definitely a place to learn. And great music. You've heard me talk about that. So that's premiumbeat.com. At this point, let's go to the interview with Vid Price in London. Stick around at the end. There might be some extra stuff. There's the record button. Hey, so this button here. So it sounds familiar, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Plenty of fun.
Plenty of fun. So today we're talking about music videos with, do you pronounce your name Vid? Just Vid Price? Vid.
Yeah, that's right.
Is that short for something?
Yeah, it's actually short for David, but it's the other end of it.
Okay. How did that come about?
Do you know what? Everyone always says, oh, that's convenient, isn't it, being a video editor? But complete coincidence. It just, my brother called me when I was a kid, when I was about three. His name is Robert, and he used to call him Bert, and he used to irritate him that I found that amusing. So he called me Vid in retaliation. It's just stuck ever since. So yeah, parents, everyone, they all call me Vid.
You know, a good friend of mine who's been on the other show that we do, Digital Cinema Cafe, his name is Topher Martini, and his name is Christopher. My name is Christopher also. And I told, when I first met him, I was like, really? And he goes, yeah. And I said, because my mom wanted to call me Topher as a kid.
Really?
Same kind of thing, the inversion, the other end of the name. So, Welcome to the little show here.
Well, thanks for having me.
First name. This is the whole podcast about people and their strange first names. No. So, Vid, you found me via Twitter. I've been following you for a while. And I hadn't placed the name and the icon with some of these videos that I've been seeing. We could talk about that, but so tell me the percentage of your work, how much of what you do is music videos?
It's probably 60-70%.
Wow.
And the rest is then sort of commercial, and I do the odd little bit of drama now and again, but not as frequent. But yeah, I'd say music videos probably 60-70%.
Would you say that most of your stuff is I'll call it broadcast or very high profile?
It's taken a while to get there, but most of the bands and artists I work for have all pretty mainstream.
Yeah, that's always convenient. I know guys who when asked, you know, by potential clients, hey, can you show me some of your work, I can't remember who it was, but they used to have a great line. They'd say, yeah, turn on your TV. That's what I do.
sometimes if I get home from the pub and I've maybe had a couple of drinks, I sometimes play the game where I just flick through the music channels and I can't go to bed until I found one that I've done. So normally would just take about 5 minutes or so. Depending on how many I've done recently. But yeah, I mean, there is that point as well that a lot of the time these days when people are looking at you to do a job, they don't always necessarily even look at the work. They look down the names and say, oh, right, you've worked with this artist. That, oh, yeah, I know who they are. Great, you're obviously at a certain level. So the sort of work comes like that now, really.
Oh, absolutely. And to a certain degree, I mean, there was the story in the news just recently about who was it? It was the angry guy, Christian Bale. Who got accepted to do the Steve Jobs biopic?
Yeah.
Apparently, without an audition, and then then I guess just yesterday he backed out of it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess you know what you're going to get when you hike. It always kind of amazes me always that people at that level kind of still audition for stuff. You think, sure, you know what Christian Bale's like and what he's going to do, eh?
You would think, yeah, yeah. Mm. So, How long have you been in this business for?
So I started as a runner in, I think it was about 2000.
Wow. Okay.
I started, I dropped out of my degree when I got a job as a runner, which is the reason I went to go and do kind of film school and all that. I got to work for a small little company, which again, I always wanted to be small, nowhere big. And this genius editor called Nicholas Wayman Harris, who's now stateside, actually. He's over in LA, and he's just an amazing music video editor, one of the best around, really. And I just did that thing of just worked every hour I could and just learned. I learned from some amazing people and just, you know, just took it all in. And, you know, I thought I could cut until I started working with Nicholas, and then he kind of showed me how to really cut, you know.
So what was that? You know, there's some great, you know, stories that I've heard in the past about people who just, you know, basically fell at the feet of the masters and said, you know, I will, you know, teach me anything you want, you know. What was that like when you first got to even just be in the room with him and watch him work?
It was amazing. It's quite like, as a runner, obviously I didn't see too much of him to begin with, cause I was obviously doing teas and coffees and, you know, and all sure. the bits you do as a runner. And then it was about 6 months. The person who was assisting him left. And then the way it used to work with him is Nicholas would become his assistant. And then you'd just get this intense training or however long you're his assistant. And then when you'd kind of reach that certain point, you'd then drop down and assist the other guys and then transition into editing. But sitting in a room with him was amazing, because you would just you'd work all the hours and spend more time with his wife, you know, doing and but once I'd kind of done my thing and he was doing his thing, I just used to sit next to him with my feet up with a can of Coke, and he'd just sit there and just be going, what I'm looking for here is this, and what I'm doing here is this. And literally I would just sit there and learn nonstop, and which sort of happens less and less these days, because people don't really have the time to kind of sit in and assist one person anymore in that kind of style. And it's a great shame, I think, because you just, you know, it's what an apprenticeship, really.
Yeah, I think I totally agree. It's very difficult to be in a situation. Well, there's two things, actually, I think that happen. One, it's very difficult to have enough time to say, I'm going to slow down and, you know, mentor the kid, you know, because it is going to make me work a little bit slower. But I think that I also think that there is a lack of, I don't know that it is respect of the young people of the old people, or if it is just respect or just a feeling that, you know, hey, you know, I got this. I really don't, you know, need your help.
Yeah. There's that definite feeling. I think especially now with the democratization of the equipment. I mean, I went to film school because Avid back then was, you know, what, £25,000, you know, a machine or something. There's no way I could afford to get anywhere near it other than, you know, be a runner or go to film school. So I went to film school and did that way. But now obviously it's so cheap. People come up and they can cut, you know, they can cut, but there's a difference between being able to cut and then, you know, really knowing it. Like I say, when I started, I thought I could cut until someone who's amazing showed me, you know, how to really do it. And, you know, it was a massive learning curve, and it's a shame, you know, if people can kind of drop that and be willing to learn, as we all still do, don't we? You know, I'm still learning now. So, it's such an important thing.
Here's an interesting thing. You know, we were having this discussion in our office the other day about the movie, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. And the discussion came up about the kind of lean forward moment that we all have with any sort of a product or a show where it grabs us. You know, it's that moment where you go, oh my God, I love this, you know? What do you see? So for me, with Walter Mitty, it was the opening title sequence. It was it was the subtlety. It was the beauty of it. It was the fact that here are these giant names in the film industry that are being relegated to, you know, underneath the edge of an overpass and making it look like it's paint that's 20 years old, you know, and them being okay with the fact that, yeah, that's fine if you want to make my name that small in the frame. And so that was a real bold statement to be so understated, if you will. I know there's a contradiction there. What is it that you see in a music video where you have that sort of lean forward moment where they get you? What are the things that that you're attracted to?
That's a really, really good question. It's a funny one. A lot of the stuff I do can be quite quickly cut and be quite, you know, quite full on and flashy. But the stuff I really like actually is when it's really, there's not much editing going on at all. When I say not much, not many kind of physical cuts.
Right.
You know, I remember doing, I did one video for a band called The Kills, which was directed by the actress Samantha Morton. And it was just the two members of the band in a photo booth, and there's only about six edits in the whole video. And I always remember the producer saying to me, you know, because they would put it in for like an award for best editing, I was like, well, people aren't going to vote for that. And they said, well, you know, there's more editing in those six shots than there are in a music video. It's got 200 edits,
right?
You know, it's knowing when not to cut. And I think, you know, that is something I'm always looking for when I'm watching videos, you know, when people hold back and don't just kind of hit you in the face straight away.
There's a great documentary about the recording of the U2 album, The Joshua Tree.
Yeah.
And there's a point in it where the Edge is in a recording studio and they have the 2-inch masters loaded up on a machine and they're going through the end of, and I can't remember what song it is off the top of my head now. And Edge was saying, you know, that there was a real temptation at the end of that song to just let the guitar part completely, you know, go wild. And he said that what really worked for it was not, and was pulling back and actually doing less.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's one of the big hits, big singles off of Joshua Tree. I can't remember. I should probably look it up. But what was the first kind of there's always a transition to I did this music video for my buddies down at the pub, and then all of a sudden you get a chance to do something that's like, oh wow, this is something that all my friends are going to know, this, you know, this artist. What was that like the first time you got to do that?
It was amazing, actually. It was amazing. I got in trouble because I had to miss the first 2 days of my holiday. It was one of those ones like, I can't turn this down and I've got to do it. You know, it was such a kind of big break at the time. It was kind of quite a weird feeling, really, to kind of gone from doing little small videos for your mates and stuff to then suddenly like a really high profile band and sort of sitting again and being there and cutting it and sort of presenting it and thinking, did I just do this? And then the thing is, once you get that first one done, you're off and running and, you know, and off you go, really.
Yeah, that's great. So you mentioned in film school, it gave you access to working with Avid.
Yeah.
And I take it that's what you started with?
Yeah, yeah. Because before that, I'd just done, I'm terrible with memory of names of things, but used to do some VHS 2 machine jog wheel editing and all that when I was at first at college, and then some really basic non-linear editing system, which I cannot for life remember, something like Fast Edit or something like that.
Yeah, there was a system called a Fast.
Which ironically wasn't. But I just got the bug, and I hadn't initially intended to get into editing at all, but it was part of the general course I was doing, and as soon as I did this one exercise on it, I was completely hooked. And then went to film school to do editing, and I could specialize in editing on the course. So I just kind of learned Avid. So I used Avid for probably the first six, seven, eight years of my career, I suppose.
Okay. That takes us up to 07, 08.
Yeah. Yeah, something like around then, yeah.
So you were never really big into old Final Cut, or were you?
I started using it a bit in the background when I was using Avid. And when I first got it, I didn't like it. I always remember thinking at the time that I had this thing and I thought, oh, Avid has been made by editors and Final Cut's been made by programmers, you know. That's the way it kind of felt to me at the time. But it was that thing of unfamiliarity. But I just gradually kept using it and using it. And before I knew it, I was using it all the time instead of Avid. And so I'm guessing that was probably around, again, I'm rubbish with times and dates, but I'm guessing it was around Final Cut 4, something like that.
Yeah, that would be about 05, I believe.
Yeah.
I don't have those dates down either.
Yeah, probably around that sort of time, maybe just after. And I started doing, you know, show reels on it and stuff like that. And then gradually I just got so used to it. I just found it so much faster around the timeline than I was on Avid. So then I just migrated full onto Final Cut 7, which I used for, you know, up until a few years back.
I've had this discussion with some other friends. There's my friend Kevin Monahan, who works at Adobe, and you know, I've always said to Kevin that, you know, I see him as like a real editor, meaning, and I'm kind of sort of a hack, but to me the difference is the person who, you know, activates tracks, targets tracks. Everything is, you know, mark in, mark out, target this track, lay it in, you know, everything's off the keyboard.
Yeah.
And I'm very much, although I do, you know, I'm pretty good with keyboard shortcuts. A lot of times in the editorial process, I'm basically just drawing rectangles on a screen,
you know,
that represent the length of a clip. Did you find that coming from Avid that you were very keyboard driven like that?
Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, I always found Avid, and I changed it a little while back, didn't I? But it wasn't easy to just pick a clip up on the timeline and drag it and move it.
Yeah.
You know, you had to go into a mode to do it, and, you know, I used to remap the keyboard to make it quicker and easier. And that was the big thing that really sold me on Final Cut, and was the fact that I could just pick something up and move it and not, you know, and not be having to keep pressing buttons and going to modes to do it. And like you, I use keyboard all the time for various other things, but I love the tactile feel. I like to feel like I'm picking something up and moving it and shortening it as much as possible. You know,
I totally get that, because that's definitely, you know, my background is more in graphic arts. I did a lot of live television in the 80s, because the editorial tools that I had access to were pretty rubbish, and I just didn't, I don't want to sit and work at this piece of equipment all day. So I just did, you know, a lot of live television up until about 2002 or so. And then I got into a lot of, corporate speaker support stuff. I did for many years, I took people's crappy PowerPoint presentations and made them, broadcast ready. That was a lot of work because, you know, people are putting too many tiny words on one screen.
Yeah, so
there's
yeah.
a lot of interpretation involved in that. And then from there, the tools that I had actually, you know, they got to the point where, oh, this very same computer I could edit video on. And now I'm taking all my broadcast, you know, the timing of cutting a live show and bringing it to a timeline. So it was an interesting thing for me. But the idea of just, you know, picking up, moving and drawing and whatnot just felt very comfortable to me. And I think when I did own an Avid for a short period of time in the late 90s, I found it to just want to fight me every time I tried to touch something.
Right, yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, that's the thing. You don't want to feel like you're fighting, do you? You want to kind of, you want to be keeping up with
like
you.
I'd like to work together, yes. Can't we collaborate on this little project, Mr. Edit Box?
Exactly.
So without belaboring the horrible launch of Final Cut 10 that we've discussed so many horrible times in the past, and I know everybody's heard the story, I'm going to assume you didn't jump into Final Cut 10 day one and say, oh, wow, this is awesome. This is the tool I've always been waiting for. Well, but, or unless you did you?
Well, obviously, like a lot of people, downloaded it on that first day. Obviously, you've had on your show a few times. I used to work with Thomas Grove Carter, and, you know, we both sat there like,
what the hell?
just download it on the day it came, you know, came out and kind of liked it. But it was that thing of those things that were missing that, you know, blah, 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 has all been through. And then there was one particular thing that was missing in relation to music videos, which was the thing was like, I really like this, but I can't use it for a music video. But hence what we both tried to do was, well, let's learn this. And because everyone else is dismissing it, I still thought this is where it's going to go.
Interesting.
So like, let's just learn this. And then in a few years time, when it will never inevitably be, you know, starting to be used more,
right,
we'll be
a little ahead.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was the one, what was that deal breaker feature that you needed for the music videos?
It's actually, and I think it might have been Scott Simmons mentioned it before on Avid, actually. I think on, might have been on your Digital Cinema Cafe one, possibly. It was the gang sync mode. So when you would, you could kind of sync your canvas and your browser, whichever way around it's called now, you could sync the two together. So wherever you moved in one, it would move in the other.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So when you're doing a music video, obviously if you're going through your clip and you're in the middle eight or something like that, you don't want to then have to go down into your timeline and then have to go and find the middle eight to put it in at the right point at the right time code. Whereas if the two are sunk together, when you move one, you move the other, then, you know, when you load a shot and it's perfectly in the right place.
Right. Now, do you solve that now by using the multicam?
No. In fact, there isn't a... I've come up with a way around it.
Right. Classic kind of... That's sort of the classic sort of Final Cut 10 problem. And Scott gives me a hard time about this all the time. He goes, yeah, you worked around it, but it's still a problem. I go,
You see, the workaround thing really bugs me a bit, actually, because it's only a workaround if it's a workaround to, you know, the way you're used to doing it. It doesn't mean the way that, you know, we do the workaround, as people call it, is wrong. It's a different way of doing it.
That's interesting.
The other piece is a workaround to how I do it. I mean, I think, and I have this not argument as such, but on a lot of the forums with people who use it, having, you know, and I used to as well. So I kind of get it. I feel like I've got a good grounding in both. Of course, a better thing about workarounds, isn't it? Sorry, it's completely slipped my mind what I was going to say now.
Well, you were talking, and I just want to clarify, because what you're doing slightly is arguing semantics. But so you're saying that if I'm used to, say, I'm cutting in, you know, Final Cut Classic or whatever, and I'm used to clicking this, 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 and this, and that is how it is done.
Yeah,
that is the definitive way of how it is done. Now, if I cannot click those exact same things in Final Cut 10, then finding an alternative way of doing it, because my historical frame of reference is Final Cut Classic, then I will label the alternative way of doing it a workaround, which, as we all know, is a derogatory term. And what you're saying is, well, sure, you could call it a workaround, But I like to look at it as, this is just the way I do it now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if we'd all learned Final Cut 10 first and then had to do the Avid way of doing something, you'd say that's a workaround. So, does it do the job? Yeah. Is it fast? Yeah. Great. It's fine. You know, and it's that thing. I think if your point of reference is something you've learned. And again, this is that thing, that argument on the forums, is people say, oh, it's not as intuitive. And it's, well, a lot of the people saying that have used Final Cut 10 on a job, they've had to use it, they've learned it for a week or so, and then they're comparing that with maybe 10, 15, 20 years of experience on Avid. Yeah. And of course you're going to know and feel the thing you've done 20 years on is more intuitive, because that's what you know.
That's your habit,
And yeah, exactly. And I've said, you know, in the past with that, it's like, well, you know, that doesn't necessarily make it intuitive. It just means that it's learnt. You know, you've learnt how to do that. It doesn't mean it's intuitive.
Exactly.
Necessarily.
Totally agree. I'm sorry. I'm typing. I'm pasting your URL into something here.
The solution I came up with. Do you want to?
Yeah. So So here's what I want to do. First of all, explain to me. And I know that Scott probably tried to explain it to me, but I'm just a little thick this way sometimes. Mm. Explain to me the old way of ganging the timeline to the bin. Explain to me how that would work in Avid, and then we'll work on your alternative method. Notice I didn't call it a workaround.
So Avid and on Final Cut 7 as well.
Sure.
In fact, I remember when you did this on the thing with Scott, I remember you actually editing it out, because when you're saying it's like, ah, someone else does that way, and then you cut it out, it's like, ah. So you would line up your point of reference, let's say the beginning of the track in your timeline, and then on your clip, and then in Final Cut 7 there's a little icon at the top of the window where you could click it, and it would gang the two together. So that would then mean that at the point you've put your timeline, you've put them both together, and when you click gang, it now says, right, those two will move at the same place wherever you move forward, backwards, they're always going to be moving at the same place together.
So this is shuttling, this is ganging the canvas with the viewer.
That's correct.
Interesting.
That is correct. So if you say you start, your timeline starts at 1 hour. If you then move a minute in on your, if you're watching your clip, you minute in, you think, I like this bit, I'll put this bit into my timeline. Your timeline is at the precise point that your clip's at, so you just drop it in and keep moving, and you drop things in. And then you can move back to the start. They're both still in sync. So then, and this is done with multi-clip. So I then cycle up to my second angle, watching it as one single angle, go through that and start picking out the bits I like, dropping it in. And then you move back and you just keep going like that. So that's the way we used to use it. And then the multi-clip part would come in once you've kind of chosen all the great parts of your, you know, maybe 60 run-throughs of a song. You can then, once you've got them all on your timeline, then I would use the multicam to change angles in there. I think, all right, I've got three shots of the drummer together, you know, what else have I got? And I could flick through and see, oh, there's a great shot of the guitarist, I'll go to that, and then start slipping and sliding, things like that.
Yeah, in Final, I just bothered to launch Final Cut 7 for the first time in a long time. And there's three little pop-up windows in the above the viewer. One is the scale of the viewer. The far right one is where you used to turn on like the wireframe or the timecode overlays. And the middle one, it says sync off, open, and gang.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. A feature I have never, ever used.
Mm. So. For multicam, it was amazing. It was really, really good. So that was like a major stumbling block. So I was thinking, how can I? Because everyone kept going on about how good multicam was when multicam finally came into it.
Right.
And I mean, that's the other obvious reason why I couldn't use it, because there was no multicam at the time.
Right.
When multicam did come, everyone was saying how great it was, and it is, but it's still like, I thought, oh, they've got to be gang sync will be in there, and it wasn't. It's like, ah, this kind of makes it useless to me, because I think a lot of people who use multicam will have maybe 8, 9, 10 angles, something like that. And a lot of people will use it in a live kind of way, switching to angles as they go. Whereas if you've got 60 angles, you know, like run-throughs of a music video, which can happen, you know, you need to watch every single clip on its own. You can't watch it with like eight other things going and, you know, make a good decision. So I didn't really know how I was going to get around that at the time. And it took a little bit of work, but kind of came up with something in the end.
So what's your alternative way of doing it?
So my alternative was, in the end, to multi-clip everything together. So I still got the multi-cam. Now I lay that in my primary storyline. And then I will, you know, there'll normally be, I'll make sure there's some black at the front of it, of the multi-cam. I'll then blade it a little way in. And then I go through my clip and I still pick the bits I like. But what I now do is I now delete the part before the bit I like and then delete the part afterwards. So I've still got in my timeline the maybe this 1 second part of the performance I want. And then I keep going through the clip, pulling things out like that. And by the time I've deleted all the bits I don't want from it, I've got maybe 5-6 parts in there in the right place that I like. Now what I do is I go back to my multi-clip at the front of the timeline, which has been bladed, so I haven't deleted it. I would then drag that out, switch angle, blade it again, and then do the same process again and again like that. So I'm always going back to the original part of the multi-clip, swapping the angle, dragging it back out, and selecting my new bits from there.
So in a typical timeline, you're going to have a lot of stuff stacked up.
Yeah, and the way I deal with that, I kind of did miss a little step there. After I've gone through my take and I've got my, say, 5 or 6 clips, what I then do is I then use the, option command up arrow to lift out of storyline.
Yeah, I think it's command option up arrow. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that then lifts it up into a secondary storyline. Mm-hmm. I then do it again. So it then just becomes normal connected clips.
Yep.
And then the key thing to this is then dropping it below the primary storyline so I can then redrag out my multicam, flip angle.
You know, that's an interesting, what you're talking about is really interesting and it kind of blows people's minds if they haven't seen it before. And frankly, I saw a screen grab, you probably have seen it, of Thomas Grove Carter's, that Honda, you know, click the R.
Right?
Yeah, it's a great piece. But I think that he cut his whole piece that way.
He cut like,
you know, one angle was on the primary storyline with all of the associated audio bits and bobs below that. And then the other angle, the other, you know, the alternate universe, whatever you want to call it, was in a secondary storyline above the primary storyline with all of its associated audio above it.
Yeah.
So when you, if you haven't done that, in a timeline, it kind of blows your mind. I can remember the first time I had a green screen on my primary storyline.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to push it up to slide to the quote unquote track two to slide a background plate underneath it. I could just put it down where the audio belongs, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. And so you put it below. Now, like I said, I can then work on my next batch of clips, pull them out, drop them below. And I don't know if you've noticed, actually, it's a really interesting little way Final Cut 10 works. If you've got clips above the primary storyline and you drag one clip past another one, you know, as if they're going to butt together,
yeah,
the clip that you are trying to drag past will jump up out of the way, right?
Right.
It will jump up, so your clip you're extending will go underneath it, which, you know, apart from – I find that kind of odd sometimes. I kind of think, well, the one I'm dragging out is the one I want to – go on top, right? Because
That's a very good comment. If you're pulling out shot number one to extend it beyond the first frame of shot number two, ostensibly it's because you want to look at that. And you would think that the logic of that would say, oh, he's touching this one, it's more important, I will promote this above the previous shot. That is a very interesting comment. I've never heard anybody say.
And so what's interesting, where it gets more interesting, is so if you drop your clips, if you're working below the primary storyline, the reverse is true. If you drag your clip out,
it will go above.
The one you're dragging past will drop underneath rather than go on top.
So maybe we're just all editing the wrong way. Maybe we're supposed to be editing below the primary string.
It's kind of interesting though, right? I mean, it's kind of an interesting little...
Somebody had to sit down. I promise you there was a discussion with a couple of people in a room going, okay, so what do we do? So, there is a document that probably is, this is the logic of how the magnetic timeline will work. What if this happens, then this? And I would agree with you. I think that the clip that you are touching should always take precedence in priority over the one that you are dragging past.
It would seem to make sense, right?
I think it makes perfect sense. And I would like to have that changed. Thank you.
Yeah. So once that is done, you know, if you've gone through 60 clips like that and you drop them below and you know, you're making decisions as you go. And the thing I love about doing this way of going through, I mean, is that one of the things I learned from Nicholas, who I used to work with, was this kind of idea of trying to allow mistakes to happen and that mistakes aren't bad. And it's an idea of turning off a filter in your brain, really, that sort of stops you from doing things that you know are wrong. So, for example, in a performance video, sometimes you can get some amazing little flash cuts, 1-2 frame things, which are actually quite hard to kind of engineer. Do you know what I mean? And make them really dynamic and great. And yet, this technique of going through your clips individually and putting them down, you know, even if you pick out a little 6-frame piece you think's great, lay it down, or you pick out, you know, you could pick out a piece that's 5 seconds long, but then over the course of the next 10 takes you've gone through, you might just go over that clip with a couple of bits, right? You might go, and it might have just left 2 frames of it. And sometimes when you play it back, it's like, that is amazing. And yet you could, you wouldn't have chosen to have edited it like that. But these are the things that give it life and create some of my best edits have been done like that. And so it's that thing of trying to turn that filter off in your brain to allow you to make some of these happy accidents sometimes, which, your brain stops you from doing normally, I think.
So in essence, if I was going to summarize the way you would do a music video where you mentioned 60 takes.
Yeah.
You're going to go through the first, you know, primary take, yep, whatever, and you're going to go, yep, love this, yep, and this and this. Okay, now let's go through the next angle.
Great.
Well, I love this. Yep. Now, it may very well be that from a synchronization standpoint, you're picking, you know, the first line of a chorus, mm-hmm, on multiple takes. So yep, later, so hopefully by the end, by the time you've gotten through all 60 takes, you very well may have your entire timeline filled, but the priority is still going to be on take 60 and not necessarily take one. So at that point, now you only have so many shots at any given moment to go through and say, well, I liked this from take one. I liked this from take 13. 29 was spectacular at the same moment.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm going to give 29 the priority.
Yeah. And so as you're going, a lot of the time, I have this thing, I try and be instinctive when I'm cutting. So if I've got a couple of options, generally I try not to give myself too many options. I'll try and make decisions. Yeah. I will look at something and be like, oh, I had a great take there. Is it, this one's better. I'll lay this one down and I'll go over it. But sometimes, like I say, I lay it over, and if it leaves 2 frames of the shot below it, I leave that because sometimes that can be interesting when you play it back. And if you've got quite a few of those together, all of a sudden you come up with some interesting stuff. But yeah, essentially that's kind of correct. But yeah, but a lot of time I try and make those decisions as I go, because 90% of the time your instinct's right.
I have a favor to ask. I'm going to ask this very publicly, and sure, it very well be maybe something that you cannot share publicly.
Mm-hmm.
But then we're just going to tease the world. There is an app on the App Store called Screenshot Timelapse.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a couple of bucks. I think it would be fascinating. So basically you set a duration, or you set an interval, like, you know, 1 frame every 3 seconds or whatever. And you just fire this thing off at the beginning of the day and just, uh-huh, and just let it rip. And on a two screen system, I don't know if you edit with two screens or one.
Yeah.
It actually does make a giant wide canvas of both of your screens.
Nice.
But I would be fascinated to watch a time lapse of you doing a whole music video.
Yeah, definitely. Next time I've got a, I've got one, especially with performance, because it is one of those, it's quite a hard thing to explain. When you explain people, I remember when Thomas Grove Carter first joined us at the company we were both at the time, he'd done a few music videos, and I could see he was a great editor even then. And I kind of, he used to do the, what a lot of people do is that it's kind of checkerboard thing where they'll lay all of their 40, 60 tracks all on top of each other and just pull bits out, and then, but they've still got 60 tracks, and it's like, Christ, what's at the top? How can you, I can't decipher that. So I showed him this method, and, you know, then he just went from there and was just, you know, yeah, obviously he's amazing. But it's, but explaining it's quite difficult. Once you see it and you get it, it's like, ah. Right. And the key to it is the multicam, because like I say, you make those decisions, but you obviously you're not stuck with them, because you can put a blade in and then you can cycle your angles. Like I say, if you feel you've got too many shots of the singer next to each other, or however you want to do it. So it's the multicam that really makes that work.
Yeah, I've done very few music videos. I did one for a band in LA called Seven Lions, and they did a song, and it was interesting. It was a collaboration with one of our corporate clients. And we did, it was my first experience with the multicam. We shot this thing the day before the multicam feature was released.
Good time.
Like I wasn't on the shoot, but I was like, oh, how am I going to cut this thing? And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, new 10.03 multicam. I go, score. and so we had, it was just 20 angles, 10 passes with two cameras. And it was astonishing to me, because what, you know, my technique was definitely different than what you've done, is I purposely front loaded the first like nine angles to be sort of my hero angles.
Right.
Because those I could look at in a nine up. Uh-huh. And again, you know, my background live, you know, I can watch nine feeds, and you can sit there and you can just tip tap on your keyboard and you could screw it up a million times from Sunday. And then what I would do is I would go through and watch those nine angles. Now I'm not watching everything of every angle like you did. And I'd go, yeah, I'm sick of this now. What else do we have here? And then I would dig through the different angles. I go, oh, this is really cool. And then I would drop something in, but I'm definitely missing out on the confidence to be able to look somebody in the eye and say, I've watched every frame and these are the best moments. I could very easily have misplaced some really cool little bits because this was good enough.
The thing I find, by the time I've done my first pass, I quite often find 70% of the decisions I've made in the cuts will be in the final edit. You know, it's so much of the work is done there, and then the rest is kind of balancing, you know, maybe doing a few extra little bits, but essentially it's balancing. Once you've got the raw energy that you need in that very first pass, and that's why a lot of people make the mistake of trying to make, and this is true of any edit, I suppose, trying to make an edit perfect on the first go. It's like, don't bother, just get into it, lay stuff down. It's so much easier to react against the timeline in front of you rather than an empty timeline and trying to think like. And the other thing I do as well, as different to what you're saying then about front loading, I don't order my angles in any particular way. I actually quite like them random. So I might go, I might have, say, 5-6 run throughs on the guitarist and 6 on the singer or whatever, but I don't watch them back to back. I'll have them all mixed up because, you know, sometimes you watch 6 takes of something back to back, you kind of think, oh, I've just seen that in the last one. And you kind of skip past things. Whereas if you mix it up, keeps it a bit more interesting, keeps your eyes a bit more, you know, alive and interested in what you're seeing.
Right, exactly. So anyway, yeah, that application is called Screenshot Time Lapse. I'll put it in the show notes, but it's a couple of bucks. And I did it once on somebody had given me an Illustrator document that I had to break into like 200 layers. And I was like, oh, this might be interesting. And I ran it. I was like, oh, yeah, that was really boring to watch.
The only thing I'm worried about is it's going to show how little time I spend actually doing it and how much time I spend procrastinating.
You know, somebody recently, and I can't remember who it was, maybe I'll have to find this also for the thing. The guy was doing a serialized you know, TV episode of something, you know, I want to say like CSI or something like that, some American television.
Yeah.
And he did a time lapse of like, it was like a 8-day edit, I think.
Right.
And he actually had to drop in some lower thirds at where there was, and it wasn't just his screen. There was like a camera over his shoulder primarily, I think it was. And there were times where he had to drop in some lower thirds and he goes, I was waiting for dailies for 4 hours. You know, something happened on set. I didn't get my dailies for this morning or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, and that would be my excuse as well.
And then there's also, you know, the view of his laptop in the corner. And you can see, oh, yep, he's on Facebook. It's. I think watching people work is fascinating, and I would encourage. You know what? I'll tell you what I will do. I will put together like a gallery of people if they want to send me time lapses of their edits. Idea. Yeah, it might be educational as well.
Yeah, but definitely. I think you learn something off everyone, you know.
Absolutely, and you know what? Let's face it, you can learn good things or bad things. Not all of us.
Yeah, true.
Not all of us get to sit around with a mentor like Nicholas, like you had.
Yeah, I was very lucky.
So what are some of the things in Final Cut 10 where you look at it and you go, why did I not have this all along? What are those things that are the things that you just can't live without now?
Now, one thing, say a keyword collection or something, one thing I do all the time now is I'll keyword a scene of something. Let's say it's a thing of a car journey, and it's, you know, there's a part of the video where they're in a car. So I'll keyword all the stuff that's the car. And then, you know, you've got a keyword collection of all those things. Then what I do is I go through those takes and I'll add metadata to the scene metadata within the clip. So the car will be broken up into getting into the car. So there'll be 5 shots of that. So I'll just highlight those 5 shots. Go into the inspector under scene. I'll just put, you know, getting into car, and then there'll be driving car. Do the same thing, and then within your keyword collection, if you then sort by scene, you then get a really nice. All the stuff are separated with a little heading above them, the individual sections. So it's not just one big mass of clips of various stages of that scene. It really divides them out really neatly.
Right. So what you're saying is first you go to the keyword collection of car, and then you in the column. You sort by scene also.
Yeah, exactly. And it gives them a little title above those things, and it separates them out really nicely, and it will give them a disclosure triangle so you can...
Oh, actually, yeah. So you're talking about doing something else. So I was talking about being in list mode.
No. This is in...
So this is actually a very good thing because this is not something that I normally get into. I'm launching Final Cut 10 right now. So
honestly, this changed everything for me.
So in the... What you're talking about is in the right above the control bar, if you will, and the very bottom of the libraries and browser section of your screen, there's the little button that hides the libraries. There's the little pull down gear, and you're saying that you go into that and you say group clips by scene.
Yeah.
Okay. Brilliant solution. So now you're not actually looking at it in list view, which as a, you know, somebody who's cutting pictures is kind of a drag. You can still look at it in the icon view, but they're going to be divided up by entering car, driving car, braking car, exactly. Crashing car. Yeah.
And it just, so it's like another layer of organization and visually, which is great. Cause if you've got like 20, 30, 40 clips in there, especially once you've started doing your favorites, you know, it can just end up with one big mass of stuff. And it, like I said, it could be many different parts of that car scene.
Yeah.
And if, you know, when you can split it up like that, and you can then search if you need to, you can search and those, what you've added into that scene metadata is then searchable within that keyword collection, so you can narrow it down that way as well.
This is really interesting, Vid. You're actually touching on something that we've never discussed before on the show. I mean, I have talked a lot about using the filter. So now again, we're talking about in the browser. at the top of the browser, you have two little tools. One is,
yeah.
I don't know if I'm using the right term, but I'm calling it the filter. I wonder if there's a, if I hover over that. Yes, it says choose an option to filter. So I'm going to call this the filter. And a lot of times we use like hide rejected, or you could filter by favorites. Just show me things that are favorites. Or another really powerful one now is filter by unused. Only show me the bits that are unused. Now, this is a very interesting phenomenon. Let's say I have a clip that's 10 seconds long, and I've used 3 seconds from the middle of it. Once I sort by unused, that one clip is going to turn into two clips. There's the bit before the part I used and the bit after the part I used.
Yeah.
Then to the right of that filter pull down is the little find box. And I've talked a lot about how you can use that filter and the find box in conjunction with each other to sift through your data. And you're actually saying, okay, now that I've sifted through it, I want to look at it, but I want to look at it in a way that's logical too. And that's by using the group command, the group clips by. Exactly. And I got to tell you, I never touch this. It is always on none for me.
Try it.
Yeah.
Next time you've got some light, try it. It's great.
You know, it's interesting. I do keywords. Like for example, I just finished a large screen piece, which I think played this morning in Denver. It's a big, 5,900 pixels wide. And, and in the course of doing something like that, it's almost entirely stock footage. And in the course of doing something like that, you know, you're searching, you're seeking stuff out. You're like, I need a better sunset. I need a better shot of somebody running on the beach. I need a woman skiing instead of a man, whatever the criteria is. And one of the things that I do all the time is I will make a keyword collection called, you know, new stock footage or something, but I'll prepend, is that a word? I'll put the date at the beginning of the keyword collection. So it's 14/11/05 is today's date, November 5th, 2014. And it'll say, you know, like stock footage or purchased footage, because I know that that's full resolution and it's not watermarked. And it's interesting, if I used this in the sort command, the group command, I could group by content created. In other words, or date imported is another, another thing. So yeah, there's a lot of ways, you know, this app.
Yeah, there's so much flexibility. And the other thing I found was I did a video a little while back for an article, Passenger, and the idea of the video is people breaking out of a mundane office, and they would jump through like a filing cabinet and be out in the woods, and then they would take their clothes off and have a party. It's great. But what they would so what I would do is I'd had my keywords for the different scenes, and there was like a transition of someone jumping through a filing cabinet, and so that was in my one side of it in the office was in one keyword collection, and this when he jumps through and comes out the other side in the forest, that was in a different keyword collection. And so I was going through it, I thought, maybe I should have put those in one keyword collection, and I was just about to redo it, and then I suddenly thought, I think it's either command or control click the two keyword collections, the two separate scenes.
Right.
If you control click them, then they'll show up in one window.
Exactly.
So to speak. So exactly. Right. Two. And then
you sort it.
This, when you group by scene, if they will do that, but they will also, it's clever enough to know that if they're both named the same thing, so like, you know, filing cabinet jump, when you click those two together, when you look in it in the combined keyword collection that it's going to show you, those will be in the same scene heading. It won't double them up. They'll be in the same one. So they're all nice and neatly put together.
Yeah. I think what this really boils down to, and this is something I've talked about before on the show, is there is absolute and distinct difference between looking for something and searching for something.
Yeah.
It's very important that we in the 21st century that are, you know, we are computer savvy people, I hope.
You know?
And let's face it, you know, we've all met the, you know, the old timers who, you know, I've actually seen people who will like sit, and this is, you know, this is a long time ago, granted, but they'd sit down at the computer, and if they weren't looking at the Avid interface, if they were looking at the desktop, they'd go, yeah, this thing's broken. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, really? It's called software, launch it, you know? But I mean, I've seen people like that, and it's frightening because I can remember I was younger and I was like, how do you get this job? How did you get this job? Why can't I have this job? Well, you know, I do, and I do now know that there's a difference between, you know, somebody who knows how to use the computer and somebody who knows how to edit. So I get that.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, so, you know, that's, I had not realized that you could. This is another thing that you're teaching me that I had never thought about. I can, just like I can in the Finder, I can control click on multiple keyword collections. And in Macintosh parlance, or I guess in all computer speak, that's called a non-contiguous selection.
Right,
the difference between shift selecting the top of a list and the bottom of the list, you'll get everything. And control clicking, meaning you'll select the top thing in the list and the bottom thing in the list or anywhere in between, but not the stuff in between. So that's a non-contiguous selection. And that affects what you are browsing in your browser.
Precisely.
Very good point. So let's say if I know that my interview, my two camera interview was done on card one, you know, A1 and B1.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to look at all of those. I can just non-contiguously select A1 and B1, and now I have all the interview stuff together.
Yeah, both angles. Correct. That's the thing I love about it. There's so many ways of viewing, of sorting, of seeing, and you know, once you've done that initial setup, it's, you know, you can just any which way you want to do it, really, for whatever you're needing to find. And it all comes down to how much you, I suppose, how much metadata you add. And the more I'm doing it, the more I'm adding. And the quicker the back end of my edit becomes from the amount of work I do at the front.
So then, Vid, let me ask you the famous last question. If you could, if you could sneak in the back door at Apple and get the guys to make, you know, the vid price feature, what would that be?
All right, I've got three.
Okay.
Hopefully they're relatively quick. First one is on multicam, is the ability to what would you call it in Final Cut 7? It was not finalized, so that's the new thing, isn't it? It's like auditions. And not break apart. Basically I want to be able to finalize a multicam, right?
Right. So to get rid of all the extra media that's doesn't need to be attached to it.
Yeah, because what happens sometimes if there's for any reason some kind of problem, basically it's if you want to match back, it's you can't really match back a multi. If you match back in a multicam, it will take you back to the multicam, but it won't. You can't then match back again
to the clip.
To the clip, it will take you to the front of the clip and not the point you need. So, and also if there is a problem with the multicam for any reason. Say if the stuff was your footage was transcoded and the time code was wrong for whatever reason, it's a horribly laborious task to go through an iMatch all the wrong shots because you cannot match back.
Right.
And if you've got 60 run throughs on a performance, that is a job you do not want to be doing. And you know, used to be able to do it in Final Cut 7. That is one thing I really hope comes over because it is a nightmare without it.
So being able to match back into a specific clip, not just the multicam clip.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Okay, that was number one.
That's number one. Second one is having more levels of favoriting. So a bit like in like Aperture, where you can have, you know, you not just only favorite something, but you can add stars and flags and whatever. I don't need too many, but it'd be nice. Quite often I'll do my selects and I do them as favorites, but then, you know, sometimes once you've been through the edit, you think, do you know what, can we go through and reselect and just narrow those selects down? That's, you know, when you're looking for more specifics, I would then like to have a way of being able to say, actually, this stuff is, you know, the best of the selects. So that would be amazing for me anyway.
I totally get it. I agree.
And then my third one is kind of linked in, and it's so I used to do before we got was it in 10.1 before we got the library. I used to do the whole compound clip thing for doing my projects rather than projects.
Right.
remember that whole thing?
Yep, of course.
And then what you could do then, which I would love to be able to do now on projects, is to be able to add scene metadata, favorites, blah, 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 to projects. So, for example, if you've done you're doing a music video, say you're saving your cuts, you've got some different versions, you might have, say you're on edit 15 or something, and you present your cuts, and or you want to present one or two, once you got to that stage, like, I don't need to see those other 14 cuts, you could just favorite cut 15 and then just sort by favorites, something like that. So I'm not, and again, if you can add, I used to do on when I did compound clips, you can add scene metadata, right? And so I could put, if it was a commercial, I could add, if I'm doing a 30 and a 15, I could add the scene metadata of 30 right. to the 30 seconders, 15 to the 15s, etc. And again, group by scene, and they're nicely grouped into 30 seconds, 15 seconds, right. 10 second cut downs, whatever.
So let me ask you this about that. You can still do compound clips if you want.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I can. So maybe I should just do that. But there's a certain part of me that likes to kind of
follow the rules
and use it how it's intended to be used. Yeah. I don't know. It's a bit silly,
there's another thing that I do. I always have a folder in every one of my events called 00 sequences. So so they're all of my different ways of searching for sequences are in that folder. Now, some of the things that might seem obvious is I have a keyword called project, a smart collection called projects.
Yeah, same here.
So all my projects are there. I have a smart collection called synced clips. I have one called compound clips.
Yep.
I have one for multicam and one for favorites. Yep. But I also have a keyword collection that I just call current. Mm-hmm. And whatever the most recent version of the project or projects, if there's multiple cuts or director's cuts or, multiple jobs inside this one job, I always put the most recent one in there. So if I just click on current, it's going to show me the things that are actually relevant, whereas everything else is like a historical record of everything else that I've done in the past.
Yeah, sure. That's quite a good way as well.
Yeah, it's not bad. Hey, so I don't want this to go too long. I really appreciate you seeking me out. And if people want a higher vid price or want to see more of your work, what's the best way to find that?
I've got my own website, which is vidprice.com. I'm on Twitter at vidprice. The edit house I cut through in London is called The Assembly Rooms. That's theassemblyrooms.tv. So you can find me on any of those.
Assembly Rooms, plural, .tv?
Theassemblyrooms.tv, yeah.
Very cool. Vid, thank you so much for taking the time to chat today, will you?
Yeah, no, thanks for chatting, man.
All right, Vid, thanks for sharing, David Vid. Funny about Topher and Christopher. Anyway, fascinating. Definitely go check out his website. He's got a great little portfolio there with a bunch of his work and some things that's like, oh, I know that song. So, we talked about that, how fun it is when you can, see the work that you're doing, in wide distribution. Like I say, I don't really have that very often, but very cool and great to share with all of us. Today is the Monday show, and we are rapidly approaching 100. I'm going to try and do a live Google Hangout on November 19th. And we will take the audio from that, and that will be the November 21st episode, and that will be episode 100 of The Grill. So if you have not heard from me, it's because I'm procrastinating. I've just been busy, and there's a bunch of you I want to contact and invite you to be a part of that recording. If you want to leave a message, send me a voice message ahead of time, I'll try and roll that into the show. I don't know why number 100 is a big deal, but I think it's just kind of, it's sort of a milestone. And we did it really quick together because we were doing these two a week. So I want to thank everybody for participating and listening in. And I appreciate all of the comments that I get on iTunes. Go to iTunes and leave those comments and stars, because that's how other people find the show. It's a big deal when the show shows up in, those like top 200 type things. And And it's very cool because that's how people find the show. So thanks again. We'll be back on Friday with another episode of The Grill. Later, later. Okay, so I am going to do something. I'm going to mark that as the actual official end of the show. However, okay. I have a couple of other questions I'd love to ask you. I just didn't want it to go rambling on too long
because sure,
I
don't sure. want to piss I'm a rambler people off. As well, man.
Well, yeah. So I have some specific, and but if you don't mind, I would like to have this be like, you know, a secret ending of the show, like let it go an extra 20 seconds or whatever. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, we're back. So,
no
so I want to ask you specifically about one particular thing that you cut.
Oh yeah.
Because it was really big in social media a while back.
All right.
And it was the Labyrinth Let It Be piece.
Ah, yes.
So I see this on a, so I just got to say, I see that piece on an editor's demo reel or website. Yeah, right. How many cuts are in that thing?
Oh God, loads. I mean,
really?
It's,
okay, so let me describe it if somebody hasn't. If you're in your car, first of all, go to Vid's website, vidprice.com. Go to the portfolio, and the icon for it is a guy holding his arms up in front of a window with a microphone. It's called Labyrinth by Let It Be. And this is a piece, you may have seen it a couple of months ago, and it looks like a continuous camera shot where there are, you know, probably 20 or 30 little sets in a big warehouse. And I saw it linked on somebody's site who was talking about the camera rig that held the camera. And I don't know what it was. I'm sure it's some big important thing. I could care less. but it appears to be a single shot. How many cuts are in it? What? Tell me about it.
Oh, well, it's motion control. And in fact, it was an interesting one. Thomas Grove Carter's been badgering me for ages to do a write up on it because it's heavy use of Slice X plugin.
Okay.
So it's motion control. So they built the set and they run the camera would obviously run the whole scene, you know, the whole move for the whole track.
Multiple times.
One big long continuous camera move. And then they would film him in one location. So say it's like the still, there's a bit of him behind his glass thing, his recording booth.
Yep.
The camera goes past that maybe three times across the whole thing. So they would film him behind that and the camera would go past him. He'd do his bit. He would swing off around the rest of the thing, come back, swing past him, do that. And then they would take a bit of the set away and film him in the next place. Camera would do the whole move again, the whole 3.5 minute track all the way around just for those specific parts. And then it's a case of kind of comping him in because it's motion control, the takes match up exactly, so it's then you can kind of comp him in seamlessly basically. And it was I cut it in I by the time we'd finished the shoot I was on set for it by the time we'd finished the shoot I'd got 85% of it cut.
Wow.
And that I couldn't have done I don't think I could have done that as well if I wasn't on Final Cut 10, for various reasons. Again, just kind of various uses of meta, because especially the end when the camera pulls back and there's all the different ones of him there.
You know, I got to say, I'm feeling like a total dope here. I don't know who Labyrinth is. And okay. I did not even realize it was the same dude in all these scenes.
Yes, same dude. Same dude.
Okay.
So it's
very
multiple
cool.
hymns. So when you pull out at the end, that is him in, I don't know how many of them are different places he's in.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's quite a big comp. There's quite a lot going on there. But it took seconds in Final Cut 10 with Slice X. Just draw a little mat around it, track it, done in seconds. And then obviously there's a lot of layers going on. But using roles, I could assign different roles. So when he's playing the guitar, that's one role. When he's on the drums, that's one role. When he's at the car, that's another role. All the different places, all different roles.
Yeah.
And then in that end comp, if I needed to change it, something, what's the other take of him in that position like? And I need to try and swap it out. And I've got, 15, 16 layers going on.
Wow.
I can just look on the roles. I can, use the timeline index and just look for guitar and it highlights it. Ah, it's that one with among, I couldn't have done that in anything else. It was that quick, I'll have to do a write up and sort of show you how it was done because it was, we'd done it and my offline, I mean that, because again, all the stuff I do generally is offline, then gets conformed and online elsewhere and graded. Okay. All the effects were done again afterwards, but my offline looks basically identical to the online, apart from they added glass into that part where he's behind the where he's that's in the still where he's on the microphone.
Oh, really? The glass was not actually there?
No, because the glass would have been so expensive to fill that size. And there's some glass in front of the car as well, which to get a sheet of glass that big is cost a fortune. So that was the glass itself was posted in afterwards.
I don't see, where's the car?
There's a bit where he's the camera swings over him in a boardroom and then comes up to it's almost like there's a Rolls Royce and there's basically like a car showroom is the idea of that scene.
Oh, not the car where he's sitting in it.
No.
With the, there's the Rolls Royce.
No, not that part. So there's a bit before that, where the car's on the other side of the studio.
Oh yeah. It's a giant piece of glass.
Yeah. But apart from those details and, the only thing they painted out really was the big motion control track that's running down the middle. All the rest of the cables and wires were kind of left in because that's part of the aesthetic.
Yeah.
So using Slice X, my offline looked pretty much almost like what you see there, which I couldn't have done in that speed on Final Cut 7 for sure.
Yeah.
Or anything else, having those tracking mats with Slice X in particular just made it, made it a breeze.
I really gotta play with that thing. They have been bugging me and I apologize to the people at CoreMelt. They've sent me 100 emails. Hey, are you going to look at this or not? It's like, yes, I will.
The combination of the two, just, I can't imagine how I would have done it in 7. It would have been the way it would have been in Final Cut 7 would have been just the clip half time the clips would cut on and off because you've got a 4 or 8 point mask which can't animate or you'd have to manually do the key. Couldn't have done it, it would have been a nightmare. To the stand, I did it, and the directors were just blown away. They were just like, I cannot believe this is an offline.
Isn't that fun? Or like, wait, you're done? Huh? What?
Yeah. And the great thing for me is, because not many people using Final Cut 10 for music videos, apart from myself, Tom Grove Carter, and in the UK at least, and a couple of the other guys where Tom works at Trim. If for any, they want to use someone else on a music video who's not using, they wouldn't have been able to do it as good as that. And so you've got that kind of hook in. That was great for me. Final Cut 10 really kind of, it was great for that,
So let me ask you how that goes about. So I'm assuming you got the job because, you're Vid Price, not because, you're that guy that uses Final Cut 10.
No, exactly. I've worked with the directors before.
So they knew, did they know that you were going to show up on set with a system with Final Cut 10 on it?
No, they didn't.
Okay. So that's a good question. What was that like when they first looked over your shoulder and like, what the hell? You're using that iMovie thing?
They were pretty cool with it. They've dabbled with it and they're just kind of like, to be honest, because they were direct, I was getting the shots coming back as they were directing. So by the time they came in, I'd already got a load of it cut. So they didn't really care what I was cutting on as long as, and they were just like, I can't believe that's the offline. So they were just made up, which was great, But a lot of times you get directors in, they're like, oh, Final Cut 10, isn't that shit? No.
You tell me. I'm done. I'm going to go get a sandwich. You're more than welcome to watch your timeline.
Yeah. That's it. And by the time, within an hour or so and showing them, they're like, oh my God, this is amazing. The thing I always find that directors love is the fact you can skim through your clip. You know, if you've got your scene, you haven't got to drag a clip up, double click it, open it. You know, they can quickly see in the scene and go, oh, that was great. That was great. I remember that.
Have you ever heard me mention one of the features I'd like to see would be, I can't remember what I called it once. It was like
the recording.
I want the software to remember what I skimmed through. So like, and this happens to me all the time. You have a browser full of clips and you're like, I think it's up here. And I was like, oh, that was it. Go back a little. Really? Go back a little.
When you fly across your bin to go up to a certain clip and go, oh, that bit you went past. Like,
yeah,
what
no.
bit?
Yeah. I have no idea what I just scrubbed across, but if I could hold down a keyboard shortcut, maybe Command Option Control or something, and then use my scroll wheel, and it would say, oh, everything I just played out to the monitor is fair game for me to scrub backward through. So it's sort of like a skimmer time machine.
Yeah.
I think that would be a great feature, because every time somebody goes, oh, go back a bit, it's like, you know, dude, I'm not shuttling through tape here. Those days are long gone.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely know that. The amount of times that happens. But yeah, but it's great. I mean, that's just, yeah, that'd be pretty awesome, right?
Very, very cool. Yeah. I wanted to ask you about that piece because again, I'm making the fool of myself. I didn't realize it was the same dude in every shot. So then I obviously would have known, oh yeah, there's a lot of editing in that. I just thought it was a bunch of people acting out little bits.
I'll do a write up about it, and I'll send you like a picture of the timeline and stuff as well. Cause it was an interesting one. It might make quite an interesting case study for, you know, people who are interested.
Do you ever have any, interaction with Peter Wiggins?
I'm not directly, no.
Because if you wrote an article and had, you know, five or six screenshots, I almost guarantee you he would put that on FCP.co.
Yeah, I need to do it. I'm lazy. I need to get on it.
Yeah, you know, you're either lazy or you're a busy editor. No big deal.
Well, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe you are lazy.
But yeah. So I need to do it. So that's because that's a great thing, like with what Tom's done with his articles, particularly the Honda one. I mean,
that Honda one, it just blew my mind.
Well, and watching what's been really interesting is reading all the forums that normally slate Final Cut 10, and actually a lot of people going, oh, I didn't realize you could do stuff like this. I'll have to give it another look. And
yeah.
And no one, the only thing people I've seen, like, where the only thing they've been able to flag up, and it's a ridiculous thing, it's people just talking about audio and just like, oh, why would you have audio above and, track, and coming back to the whole track thing. Well, versus track list.
There's flexibility. There's the flexibility it allowed him to do that. And I think in some stuff I read on Twitter this morning, somebody would, I think it was Thomas even saying that, you know, the magnetic timeline and the connected clips was made it really, gave him a lot of flexibility to be able to work with it the way, you know, he needed to have the piece come together. I think it's a brilliant concept.
Yeah.
I don't know conceptually what it necessarily means.
No, I know what you mean on that front.
I'm a great father taking my kids to school by day, but I'm robbing banks at night. So if you're that kind of a guy, you should drive a Honda.
Yeah. I take it you're gonna get him on to talk about it, right?
You know, I probably should. Yeah, I hadn't. I would have done it immediately, but I think, I mean, he's already been on two or three times, so yeah, I probably should. Yeah. I don't know that it warrants a whole hour, but I love the fact that people on the forums are like giving Final Cut another look, and I think that, you know, this Labyrinth story would be a good story too. You really should write it up because more people are gonna read Peter's website then listen to this podcast, but it is fascinating. It's rewarding and it's a little bit, maybe can I say vindicating when some of these, you know, landmark projects come out and people go, interesting.
It's that's what I love about, you know, about your podcasts and FCP.co and then the, you know, I suppose to a lesser extent because it's not public, the Illuminati group you know, is that, you know,
you're talking about
pushing out
FCPX, or what's it called? Final Cut Editors Final Cut, In Sync. Yeah.
In Sync. Yeah.
On Facebook.
Yeah. I think we survived. We both survived the cull of the weekend.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Ron was going to boot some losers out.
Yeah. But it was kind of interesting, all that, you know, I was kind of just watching on from the sidelines. And what was interesting was seeing, actually going through the list of members and thinking, like, you suddenly realize that it is quite a small group of like 20, 30 people that comment, and 270 who don't, you know, who have said, oh, I've never even knew you were in this group.
In all honesty, that's pretty common in any sort of organization or group or gathering. There's going to be a small percentage that actually get involved, and there's, you know, potentially hundreds or thousands in certain cases of lurkers.
I mean, it's difficult, isn't it, right? Because, like, I mean, I sometimes have to force myself to post because I think, like, there's some people on there who are so good technically, mm-hmm. Who could answer anything. Like, I'm thinking of, like, Ronnie Cortines?
Yep.
People like that.
Hey, what did you think of T's morphing transition?
That was awesome.
Oh, that blew me away, yeah.
Yeah, it was really clever. That was really clever, and it's like, you know, that's what I love of stuff like, is, you know, people thinking, and that's what excites me with Final Cut 10 is, like, I still think, like, there's so much in here I haven't discovered yet, you know.
Oh, just even in this discussion that we had today with you talking about the grouping, I had, the first time that was on, it was, you know, I think by default it comes in as content, content created, or I was like, what the, this is bullshit. None. Okay, now I'm
good. Yeah.
You know, but I think, and I've said this many times, Final Cut 10 solves problems that editors don't even know they have yet.
Yeah, exactly. And this thing, you know, like we were talking earlier about assisting, you know, good editors, and you know, we've got assistants where I am, and they always say I'm the easiest person to assist because I basically don't use them. Because and this is the thing I thought was kind of interesting with when you interviewed Austin Flack.
Yeah.
Was, you know, his point about saying, oh, that's all the stuff the assistants do, and, you know, I don't need to do that. And I kind of thought, kind of the point with Final Cut 10 is that a lot of the time you don't actually need the assistants to do that stuff in the first place, you know, because you can do it quickly. And this is the thing, is like, a lot of the time those things he was saying that he, you know, that he wanted assistants to do is like, I actually want to do some of that stuff. I want to find those clips. I want to find those things because that's how I understand my rushes and get into the stories and, you know.
I feel the same way. I mean, on occasion, I mean, I don't necessarily have, we don't call it an assistant editor, but we, you know, right. I have people that help me prep jobs just so it allows me to do more of the heavy lifting on more jobs. You know, sometimes, you know, the loading in and sorting and renaming or whatever I think it's very important. And I agree that it gives you a certain level of touch time with the media and it allows you to become more familiar with it. It's always frustrating when I get assigned to an edit suite with a producer coming in and they sit down day one, you know, edit one, and they start talking about something at full speed. And I'm like, you're going to have to tell me what this is about. Cause I don't know anything yet. Cause yesterday I was wrapping up something else and I apologize, but you're going to have to kind of get me up to speed. I know you've been with this footage for 2 weeks now. But you're going to have to bring me into the fold a little. And it's, you don't want to be that guy. And sometimes that, you know, that prep work actually helps you get past that thing.
Definitely. And that thing with that using the scenes, you know, the other thing that I used to do, especially in Final Cut 7, and this has been a massive time saver, I used to like rename all my clips, you know, because I'd need to know, if, you know, what they were rather than just the, you know, the A004, C003, because now, obviously, Final Cut 10, you've got your you know, your thumbnail view, and you go through, so that kind of, I can see what the stuff is, and now you can give a whole bunch of clips a scene name, and, you know, which sits above all those clips, and almost, like, names all of them in one go for you, you know, in that sense, is a, like, bit of a visual shorthand, and, you know, it's just like, just that alone has saved so much time.
Since this is not really the actual show here.
Yeah.
And although this is still, I'm still going to make this public, I want to ask you a question. This is a little bit out of your wheelhouse, but maybe you'll have some input on this. And I'm trying to find the actual email I got from somebody just the other day. Let me just scrolling back here. Good God, I get a lot of junk email. should probably go back to the stuff. Who is that? Looks like a... I don't know what that means. Okay, let's see. It's not Eric. It's not David. It is... Come on, find it, find it. This is bad television. Oh. Bad radio.
Bad, even worse.
Okay, here we... no, that was me getting mad at the mayor of Fort Lauderdale for making it illegal to share your food with homeless people.
What?
There's my... Yeah. Oh, this is wonderful.
That's
dude.
Insane.
Yeah, it is insane. And people should all write the mayor of Fort Lauderdale and tell them they think he's ridiculous. Let me think, where is... I can't find this. This is making me so angry. Well, not really angry, but a little bit angry.
Just mildly irritated.
Yeah, mildly irritated. There you go. my email box is... Have you ever heard the concept of inbox zero?
Yeah, I have. I tried it.
To keep mine at inbox 200.
Yeah. Did you ever try it? I can't remember what the name of the... There was like a male client that would do it. I actually found it... I thought, this sounds like a great idea. And then actually I found it really irritating. I went back straight away. It's like, oh no, I didn't like it at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, literally, if I can get my mailbox down to 200 unread, I'm in good shape. I think I have 11,000 pieces of mail in my inbox. So
wow.
I'm nowhere near inbox zero. Anyway, so what did I just do? I just downloaded something by accident. okay, so here's the concept. It was a listener who was dealing with, and I'm so sorry, I can't remember who you are. And I know I should, but I just, my mind is jello. They were dealing with a long form documentary, and their editor, who they were encouraging to use Final Cut 10, was like, they were an Avid editor, and their standard workflow would be to take a long interview, subclip it, and then rename the subclip something that would lead them to believe that they knew what that person was actually talking about. So a short summary of, you know, Bob talks about crashing the car. Okay. Yes. So by doing that, this person has a basically almost like a very rough transcript of what that interview was about, because this is a long form documentary. They're going to work on this thing for the next year. And, you know, just the concept of remembering about where that was is that's nowhere near that's going to happen. So how would you organize that stuff if you were in that position? You know, and because like what you could do is you could do favorites.
Yep.
But you can't rename the favorite.
Oh, yeah, you can.
How do I do that?
You need to go into, once you've made your favorite, you go into list view.
Yeah.
And then you click where it says favorite, the green triangle. Yeah, you pull your little disclosure triangle down, comes up with a green icon, and then says favorite. If you click favorite,
yes,
you
can rename that. Okay, so but the problem is now I want to look at just my favorites and not the other, you know, checkbox used, check, you know, keyword synced. I want to see just all the favorites.
Right.
So then I search. If I filter by favorites, I still see the clip and I have to twirl down. So like a single clip could have three or four things favorited in it.
Yeah. So what I mean, I don't know if this is exactly what would solve that issue, but what I do, and I've done, you know, some kind of commercial stuff where they've got an interview, they might have interviewed a guy for an hour. So rather than do the markers thing, which I know I've heard you talk about and various other people, I do an in and out on their answer, mark it as a favorite.
Yep.
And then in list view, I do the transcription, you know, in that list view instead of the favorite, you know, I name it there. And the thing I like about doing that is that when I then come to edit it on the timeline, when I click that favorite and just hit the timeline, I haven't then got to find the end of the quote. It's already marked in and out and drops in. Do you know what I mean? So rather than going back, finding your marker, but you've got your marker, but you don't necessarily know exactly where the end of the answer is.
Exactly right.
So I find that to be a really, really quick way of doing kind of a, you know, laying down an interview rather than using markers.
Yeah, but no, I agree with that. But I think that the problem is that if you have multiple regions in a clip mm-hmm. favorited, okay? Yeah. So let's see if I select this and defavorite that. All mm-hmm. right, can I do that? Defavorite that. No, how do I defavorite something? Hit F again.
I think it is to unrate.
I am not on a normal timeline. At any rate, so if I have multiple things, when I look at that clip in list view,
yeah,
I see the clip in the disclosure triangle.
Yep.
And I have to disclosure down to see all the keywords, all the favorites. And I just want to see the things that are favorited.
Yeah. So if you, it should do that, right? Does it not?
I don't believe so.
You don't want to see the keyword parts. You just want to see the favorites.
I just want to see, and you know, this is really good. I mean, he sent me, highlighted bits.
Mm-hmm.
What am I? He sent me these highlighted bits where I could see, not highlighted, but screenshots of the Avid timeline or the Avid bins. I was like, yeah, that makes really a lot of sense because each subclip it has a name and it's not a bunch of disclosure triangles. And it's not like, I don't even know. Is there a way that you can twirl down all the disclosure triangles at once? That would be kind of handy.
Yeah. That would be, wouldn't it?
I think
if you highlight all the, say you've got multiple clips there in list view, if you highlight them all,
mm-hmm.
and then I think if you push your right arrow key, I think that will open all the disclosure triangles in one go.
Look at you. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
That gets us part way there. That is
cool.
That is a worthwhile piece of info. Right arrow and left arrow will disclosure triangle all those clips.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, this is hardly a solution and hardly a tutorial. It's probably just a bunch of bad podcasting.
Yeah.
We should probably cut this short. Vid, thanks again. I'd love to have you back on sometime and talk more about those happy moments in between the shots. I think that that's something that people, I think there's a lot of logic about how to cut music that I'd love to hear more about.
Yeah, sure, man. That'd be a pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
Well, thanks. I'll let you go. End of show, end of extra show. we'll do it again sometime.
Cool, man. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
One of these buttons is the hang up. There we go. All right. Take care.
Cool, man.
Bye.